Campus FM presents 100 Years of Women on Campus, produced and presented by Patricia Camilleri. Welcome to this anniversary series remembering 100 years of women on campus. I'm Patricia Camilleri, and I shall be looking at this theme from many different angles: the sociological, the statistical, the anthropological, and the historical. I shall be asking questions about life for female students and academics on and off campus, yesterday and today, and possibly also tomorrow. I'm very pleased to have with me today Dr. Tracy Camilleri, Senior Lecturer in Systems and Control Engineering, Department of the Faculty of Engineering, and Dr. François Mifsud, Lecturer in the Inclusion and Access to Learning Department in the Faculty of Education here at the University. Welcome to you both. I'm going to give a very brief bio of the two of you, because I always feel it's important that the listeners actually get to know the academics that are working within the university. Very often they might hear a name, but they don't know background or anything like that. So first of all, Dr. Tracy Camilleri, as I said, is a senior lecturer in the Department of Systems and Control Engineering. She gained her BEng Hons and her PhD degrees from this university in 2004 and 2012, respectively. Her main research interests lie in the field of biomedical engineering, specifically processing signals recorded from the human body, such as brain signals, eye movements, and muscle activity, to extract biomarkers related to particular conditions or diseases, or to use such signals for human-machine interaction, and thus providing an alternative communication channel. Perhaps we can talk about that all in a separate program, Tracy. Dr. Camilleri is a member of the Institute of Electronics Engineers and has recently joined the local IEEE Women in Engineering group. Dr. François Mifsud completed his undergraduate studies in philosophy and social anthropology here at the University of Malta. He also holds a theology degree from the Facoltà Teologica Emilia-Romagna, Bologna, and a master's in social justice and education from the Institute of Education at University College London. Recently, he completed a PhD in philosophy of education at OISE, University of Toronto. His research orbits around questions of social justice, diversity, multiculturalism, inclusion, and educational possibilities. Currently, François holds the position of lecturer in multicultural and education studies in the Department of Inclusion and Access to Learning at the Faculty of Education, University of Malta. Quite a mouthful for the two of you, although it's probably quite a reductive description of what you do. As I said, it's important that people know about you. Our discussion today is going to be an interesting one, I'm sure, because in both the Faculty of Engineering and the Faculty of Education, there is something of a gender challenge. One faculty would like to see a better intake of females, whilst the other aims to have more males in education than have been traditionally present. Starting with you, Dr. Camilleri, although I'm going to call you Tracy, I'm old enough, I think, to be able to do that, let's discuss the general theme of women in STEM courses. STEM, obviously, science, technology, engineering, and math courses. This seems to be an issue that is not limited to engineering, and the statistics do not tell a very equal story in Malta, but neither do they do so across Europe.
Yes, so good morning and thanks, Patricia. As you were said, STEM encapsulates within it science, technology, engineering and maths, and one might wonder why we've grouped them together. And the main reason for that is that in the past years we've seen an increase in the job opportunities falling within these four umbrellas, but a lack of individuals taking up these subjects. So the demand is not meeting the supply. The supply is not meeting the demand. So we're trying to focus on what we're calling STEM education, which is a focus on the interdisciplinary nature of these units, rather than talking about physics on its own or maths on its own. We're trying to help students, children, understand that these complement each other, because that is the way we encounter them in our everyday life. as you said, if we look at statistics, the numbers are going down. If I take the Faculty of Engineering as an example, the number of students taking up our courses are on the decline every year, unfortunately.
In general,
I'm talking in general here. When it comes to women, yes, there is still a gender imbalance. I've taken up some numbers throughout this year. If I would take the current cohort, we've got roughly around 300 students in our undergraduate courses, and about only 24% of them are females. If we take students taking postgraduate studies within the faculty, the numbers go down to slightly less than 20%. I must say, however, that although the numbers in general are going down, the numbers of females taking up our courses are increasing. When I did my undergraduate degree back in 2004, now we were only about 8%. So roughly in 15 years, that has increased from 8% to up to 24%. So I think, yes, females are believing more in themselves and in the opportunities that these STEM courses can offer them for future opportunities. I also looked for some statistics on Eurostat, and I found that in a survey that was carried out in 2017, out of 18 million scientists and engineers, the proportion is 41% of them are women, and Malta stands at around 39%, so the numbers are not as bad as they sound.
I saw that statistic. I was quite impressed, actually. I thought Malta definitely wasn't at the bottom of the list.
No, we're not, but then it depends on different sectors. For example, if you take manufacturing engineering, then it is highly male-dominated with roughly 83%, whereas in areas which are more societal and there are more human development, such as biomedical engineering, environmental studies, then the numbers start to balance themselves out. Roughly 45% of them are women. So it depends on the nature of the occupations, etc.
Let's look at you as an example of a female engineer. I don't want to start off with the negative. I was going to say, what do you feel are the main obstacles to this equal gender balance in engineering? But perhaps you could tell us a little bit about your journey as an example of...
Well, I have to admit that when I came to choose what course I would follow, I didn't know what engineering is all about. And I think that is a common problem. What is an engineer? Unless somebody has someone in his family as a role model or as an example, it is difficult to perceive what an engineering role would actually entail. In my case, like many other students, you tend to be inclined towards certain subjects more than others. I just love maths. So my question was, should I go for a maths teacher, an architect, or an engineer? And back then I remember my father had taken me to the engineering exhibition, which is held yearly, where we've got exhibits of final year projects. And I was told that it has a good foundation on mathematics, and I thought it was more challenging than becoming a maths teacher. So eventually I went for that. It was still a step in the dark, because as I said, I didn't know what an engineer was. And the engineering career has so many paths, so many avenues, that you're bound to find an area that you like. The challenges, yes. I think many people still perceive engineering as being either an electrician or a mechanic, and surely girls do not find those as particular role models. So that is an issue. And even in such courses, as I said, we are only eight out of 100 students who were female, so one tends to feel this course doesn't really belong to me because there are few people like me. So peer involvement is also a bit of an issue there. So nowadays, even the faculty is trying to organize technology clubs where students come to our lab so that we give them a taste of what the engineering profession involves, and to help them understand that, no, it's not only for boys. Women can also code. Not all of the sectors in engineering need you to get your hands dirty, for example. I mean, you can do that, but most of the jobs, for example, I work on a computer every day. So there
you
are...
You don't get your hands dirty.
I don't mind it. I was always a bit of a tomboy, so even when we were doing our house, I wanted to paint, I wanted to do the kinds of stuff. So,
well, I think that we can talk later, perhaps in the program, about the solutions to these issues, about how we can persuade more women to take up engineering. But I'd like to turn to Dr. Mifsud, and he has also given me permission to call him Francois. Perhaps you could give us a bit of an outline of how gender has played out within the teaching milieu over the years?
So, unfortunately, education has been a little bit of a victim of, obviously, as any other subject, I would assume, of the social structure that we live in, no? And education has been seen as some sort of an extension of the domestic life. So, and if you follow, for example, how gender kind of, take place within society, one would easily notice that those jobs that were related to women were jobs that in one way or another had some sort of association with the domestic life, like caring, but even would be secretary, for example. A secretary, because in Malta especially, many of the paperwork in the family, in the household, was in the hands of the woman. So it became an extension of the domestic life. And in a way, education became a victim of that. And some people entered in that field with that mind frame and kept on perpetuating that idea, when education is a beast on its own. And education has actually, in reality, education, the job of education is to assist the students to kind of grow from the domestic kind of component into a more social kind of wider perspective. So in reality, the educator's job is not to extend the domestic, but to challenge the domestic. But few people get that, and sometimes even teachers themselves don't see that. So, and that was one of the realities. So obviously education became the field for many women. Interestingly enough, in Malta, especially in the early, when schools were founded and stuff like that, it was the field for single women, not even married women. In fact, I have a case. My own grandma, for example, she was a teacher, but she could not perform as a teacher because at the point she got married. So it was interesting, even kind of this dynamic. Why? There is also an interesting study about sex and teachers. And for many students, they easily can perceive and accept their parents having sex, but they find it harder to perceive their teachers having sex. And one of the reasons, because we tend to perceive teachers some sort of asexual figure, some sort of this kind of, maybe holy figure or whatever. So there is also kind of these dynamics that goes in. Are things changing? Not that rapidly, unfortunately. And one of the reasons, maybe also you mentioned it, because when she spoke about not seeing maths as a teacher of maths as challenging, I always say that the moment you add with a topic education, it becomes a reality of its own. And that's the challenge part. If you are a historian, that's something. But if you are a history teacher, then it becomes a new reality. Because practically, you are not only dealing with the topic, but you are dealing with the whole pedagogical reality of the human being, developmental and stuff like that. So, yeah, things are changing. Definitely, men now are more present in different sectors. They are not enough present, but there are also other challenges that we have to take in consideration. Salaries, for example.
I was going to say that the pay
is not good.
It's not good.
Unfortunately, for a teacher who has all that responsibility, dealing with all sorts of issues and questions, and with dealing with the future of our society, we don't have a good pay. And it's a tragedy, in my opinion. So obviously, many people are not choosing that career also for that reason.
I have friends who are teachers or have children who are teachers, and I have friends who are not teachers and don't have any connection with teachers. And it's amazing to hear the different comments. Mm-hmm. I mean, those who are involved in teaching really, really understand the issues involved. The kind of stress also that can be involved in certain situations. It is not an easy job. People who don't have connection tend to say, "Oh well, they've got long holidays," And if I hear it once more, I'm going to scream, because I really do feel, although I'm not a teacher myself.
How do you define teachers? I say we are professional jack of all trades, because a teacher in a way has to be all rounder, and for many people that is hard. We are trained from very young age to be obsessed. Okay, we are trained to be focused on a topic. As soon as we see a young kid, we ask him, what would you like to do when you grow up? So it's all, practically, we are trained to have that frame of mind. Always focus on your career and on that particular career, which in my opinion is tragic, because children need space. While teacher is the opposite. Teacher is that person who actually has to see things from different perspective, sociological perspective, psychological perspective, and then obviously the topic. So, and that is also another thing which is hard and challenging. I think it's beautiful, but it's definitely challenging, because our society, that is not kind of the thing to do.
And actually quite rare. I think we can all look back at our educational journeys, mm-hmm. and pick out those teachers that tick those boxes mm-hmm. that, Francois, you've just mentioned, that had a broad spectrum of mm-hmm. talents. And I think, yes, it's wonderful when you find one.
Exactly, yeah.
I was looking at some statistics as well, and a recent survey in the UK showed the researchers have found just 2% of UK's early years education workforce is male. Perhaps an obvious question, do you feel that there should be a better gender balance within the field? And also, if so, why?
What's the contribution?
What is the contribution of that better balance?
So I would assume, so education, when we speak of education, what is education? Not the question, what is education? Education is based on the encounter with diversity. Okay, I didn't know algebra, then I go to the mathematics classes. Unlike you, I was not good in mathematics. And suddenly you discover algebra. I didn't know about geography, I go to geography class and I discover about maps and stuff like that. So at the end, the basis of any pedagogical operation, any educational activity, is based on the encounter with diversity. So what's the contribution of having a mixed gender reality within early years especially? Is diversity. Is having a diversity reality around you. And that obviously prepares better our kids for, you know, kind of to open their minds, to engage with different realities, different perspectives. So I think diversity is the essence of education, the encounter with diversity. And obviously the quality of encounter with diversity, because encounter with diversity can create different kind of reactions in us. And that's one of the reasons, because we are afraid of diversity, no? So that's definitely a huge and a necessary benefit that education needs. Why it's still like that? I think why? Because we still live in a patriarchal structure. That's the reason, easy as that. We are not out of it yet. Mm. And we still see that man is the one who goes to work and the woman would be the one who takes maternity, and there are benefits with that because we still live in a patriarchal structure. Europe is not out of that structure. If you think of Switzerland, that was only 1975 that allowed for universal suffrage. Okay, Switzerland, I'm not talking of, you know, wherever. Yeah. Okay, the first prime minister in the world woman was India. So think of these realities. So obviously education is a victim of that.
The survey that was done in Britain, or rather by education authorities in Britain, took Norway yes. as its example of good practice. And I think from what you're saying, it becomes obvious why. Because the Scandinavian countries already have a much better mm-hmm. idea of looking upon men caring. I've been mm-hmm. in Sweden myself, for example, and seen many men pushing buggies on their own during the day mm-hmm. in the street, which is something you do not see.
Yeah. In
other European countries, and definitely exactly. not very little mm-hmm. in Malta. You might see men pushing buggies, mm. but they're usually on the weekend with their partners. Yes. So chicken yes. and the egg situation, I suppose.
Things are changing. Obviously, there's a study that clearly shows that men are being more involved in the upbringing of their kids and stuff like that. But it takes time, and unfortunately, we don't have time.
No. Cultural change, of
exactly,
course, is very
exactly.
difficult.
So obviously, you need the initiative when it comes to salaries. You can, I think there can be a more political agenda that kind of caters for this. Hopefully, even with this change of parliamentary kind of system in Malta, that might help as well, because now we have the policymakers who tend, you know, yesterday I just saw a graph of the parliament in Malta. It's ridiculous. If you notice. The percentage of presence of women in our parliament. It's just ridiculous. Okay, it's really like it's almost laughable. Okay, and that says a lot. And this is the place where runs our country.
With inevitable results. Yeah. Turning back to you, Tracy, we're talking about the imbalance and saying that it's partly cultural and partly pay. And there's also, in fact, we were talking about it before we went on air, the gender imprinting
stereotypes. Mm-hmm.
Stereotypes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. The stereotypes, and that I find is so difficult to imagine how we're going to change that, because there's a lot of commerce involved. There's a lot of money in persuading little girls that they're going to be princesses. And, as I said, I think probably if I had to ask one of my granddaughters, what she wanted to be. Now she's 5 and a half, she'd probably tell me a mermaid. So how are we going to, what is needed? How can we really work, how can engineering work towards changing, obviously can't change culture overnight, but how we can persuade people?
Personally, I don't really agree with equal numbers. I agree with equal opportunities. Because if someone is inclined to go for a specific sector, then why not? It's not necessary that we are 50-50. But when we talk about equal opportunities, I think at low levels of education, as you said, we still have these stereotypes. Girls tend to still do very well, sometimes even better than boys, when it comes to science exams, math exams. So one might wonder, why aren't they taking up these courses later on? It seems that even research shows that girls do not have the self-confidence, and they don't believe that they will survive in what they think is a male-dominated world. So even though they do very well, then they kind of keep back for various reasons. As you said, teachers, I think they play a very, very important role, and I think that is the starting point. The children look at their teachers as their role models. So from a very young age, we need to have guidance teachers which open up the opportunities, let children look at horizons. It's not just what they know what a teacher does, they know what a doctor does, but beyond that, dream big, think of other opportunities, and keep the options open. So I think teachers play a very, very important role at a very young age. There was a study, and I saw it in The Guardian, they even asked girls if they had to offer them financial scholarships, would they take up these subjects? And interestingly enough, they said no. Mm. No matter how much money they would give them, they'd prefer having role models and someone to look up to kind of give them the encouragement necessary to take up these courses, but money wasn't actually the issue, which was very interesting. And as I said, the respective faculties, we need to engage these students, teach them in a way to make them more curious about the subject, show them that they are very practical, we use them in everyday life, so that then they don't feel that it's something beyond them. Everybody can achieve them, but sometimes we kind of are afraid of things. And as you said, sometimes we find a teacher, we tend to like a subject because one particular teacher taught it in a specific way or made it interesting or said something that's interested you back then, and you tend to go to different paths depending on what you encounter throughout your paths of education. So again, I go back to the teachers. They are the basic foundations to drive our children to these interesting careers.
Different directions would be good for the children. I did listen to a TED lecture where there was a woman engineer, young engineer, who got so frustrated with not finding toys, for example, that suited her, and she actually ended up, having done her engineering training, actually developing toys that would be more attractive to girls, but that were that had engineering elements, obviously, at a basic stage. And she did this after doing a lot of research with young children in schools and in families to see what they liked and what they didn't like. And she mixed, for example, the physical block idea with books, because she found that girls were more likely to enjoy something looking at a book than actually physically, whereas the boys weren't so keen on picking up the book. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of work for us to do as parents, well, now, by now, grandparents, so that they can actually perhaps find things that would interest their children at a younger age, that might start to inspire them really from early on.
I think it comes from the family as well. As you said, sometimes we tend to, if I'm cooking, if I've got a daughter, I'll encourage the daughter to cook with me, but possibly not my son. If my husband is painting or changing an electric switch, probably he'll involve my son and not my daughter. Unfortunately, it comes from the parents themselves, who are kind of channeling the children towards specific tasks. And I think we have to break that, because any girl can change a switch, or any boy can cook or do the laundry. So
yes, that's what I always tell
my genetics.
No, it's not genetics.
I tell my sons,
we're brainwashing them.
You actually can iron a shirt.
Exactly.
Physically. We're coming to the end of the program, unfortunately. About the education system within university at the moment, we have this Master in Teaching and Learning, mm-hmm. which is a new thing, which I think has great potential for creating interesting teachers. Perhaps you'd just like to say a word about
that. It does, actually. One of the potentials, because it attracts people from different fields. In the past, usually, especially when they used to do the B.Ed., you would enter immediately within the educational sector. As soon as you practically hop in into the university campus, you are into the education. While it's not like that any longer. Practically, you are expected to do a B.A., in any subject you want, in any subject you like, obviously, then eventually you relate it with your MTL. And then after, for example, I had a student who did an oceanography and was specialized in that, and then she decided to do an MTL. So it, so MTL from, let's say, from a social perspective, it offers us the benefit of more diversity. So we have people coming from all over, from different sectors within the educational kind of, within the university field. Then the other thing, it's a master's. So obviously it offers the fact that it's a postgrad, and if they would like to eventually keep on doing a PhD, pursuing a PhD, the doors are open for them as well. And it gives us more time and space, because it's a two-year course, unlike the past PGCE, which was 1 year course. It's a two-year course, so it gives them more time to explore pedagogy and to explore education from different perspectives. I do see the benefits of it, and I think it's in few years' time we will see the benefits of it also in schools, because obviously we have teachers who are more academically and maybe more equipped. Obviously they need, why I say few years, because they need experience. Education is also about experience, as any other field at the end too. So anyone who would be interested, please join, and I think, I'm sure you'll find a job. And when it comes to teaching, there's no job issues, for sure. But it's interesting, it's fascinating, especially if you are a person who are not obsessed with one field particularly, who are an all-rounder person who would like to explore other things, and even if you enjoy teaching, education.
Well, I found an inspiration here on campus in Professor Poulet many years ago, when he first showed me a crankshaft, which sat outside engineering for a long time, and he described this crankshaft to me. And he made it sound like a work of art. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, I've been absolutely fascinated by engineering. So, yes, a teacher anytime, even when you're over 60. Okay, thank you both very much, Dr. Francois Massoud and Dr. Tracy Camilleri, for being with us today. Thank you for listening to 100 Years of Women on Campus. If you would like to hear the programs again, just go to www.maltauniversitybroadcasting.com and click on webcasts. Join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.
You have just listened to 100 Years of Women on Campus, produced and presented by Patricia Camilleri.